You're listening to the CISO Secret Podcast, brought to you by Checkpoint. And now welcome your host, James Azar.
Hey gang, James Azar here with the latest episode of CISO Secrets, brought to you by Checkpoint. So I've got a very, very special guest. He's not a CISO, he's a CTO. But this man is like, he makes Google seem uninformed. Really, that's what we have on today's podcast. Michael Kagan, he's the CTO over at NVIDIA and probably one of the smartest people I've had the pleasure of speaking with. We're going to talk about how data centers are becoming the new computer and what does that mean for us as CISOs. So, Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure having you on. And so I kind of want to give our audience a little bit about your background. How'd you get started in technology and how'd you end up in your current role?
Well, my first job was at Intel. I was started as an engineer there. I was designing microprocessors. The first microprocessor, really one that I've architected, I was architect, was 860XP, which is the vector processor. It didn't quite make it because x86 of Intel basically took over. And then I was managing the CPU design team at in Israel that we have done Pentium MMX. Then I moved to found Mellanox Technologies, which is a networking company that doing high-speed interconnect. And we were acquired by NVIDIA a little bit more than a year ago. Actually, 2 years ago it was announced, and a year ago it was closed. And now I am CTO at NVIDIA. And my job is to basically integrate the and architect across multiple technologies with NVIDIA and build the computer of the 21st century, which is a data center. It's not a component anymore.
So I love that. I want to ask you a question. It's kind of not on our prep, but I have to ask it. So you were an entrepreneur. You launched a company. You started a company. You sold it. How did you factor for security in your business as a leader and as, you know, kind of being a leader of a startup?
Well, you know, this security changes quite a lot. And in a traditional case, the security was just, you know, protect your perimeter and you are safe, assuming that you don't have bad guys on your premise, which is not quite true, but that's what the basic assumption. Now, when we move to the cloud, it's actually, you know, everybody can come to the cloud and use your computers because you basically rent your compute power and storage for customers. And therefore, security becomes much more tricky. You need to protect every node and every process. So security is a very big deal right now. And actually, making a secure cloud is an art on its own. At Mellanox, we have developed technologies that we are moving forward, implementing at NVIDIA, which is a data processing unit, or SmartNIC it's called, that actually executes, does basically infrastructure computing. Data center is the computer, and there is a infrastructure computing tier that you need to manage the data center resources and provision them. And therefore, you need to isolate both infrastructure and different users. And what we are doing is it's all about isolation and managing the infrastructure, and the security is a big part of it.
I love it. Let's talk a little bit about the difference between a data center and the cloud, because there seems to be kind of a little bit of a misunderstanding or misinterpretation of one or the other.
Well, you know, cloud, if you look at the at Wikipedia or encyclopedia, you will see that a cloud is basically fog at high altitude. So you can put any meaning out of it. The way people use it right now is that you are getting the services that you used to get from the box under a table, like computing or storage services. Now you make it, you get it as a service from the cloud out there, similar like you have power services. You have a plug in your house that you get electric power that powers all your equipment, but the source of the power is far away, somewhere in the cloud. They didn't call it cloud those days, but the computing and storage services that you get out there from the data centers, that's the cloud. Cloud so, service.
Yeah, and I think that for a lot of people, the idea of when people think of cloud, right, there's kind of the idea of what a data center is, which is a place that's predominantly racks. Right. And then there's the cloud provider, like, you know, the big ones like AWS. And just last week on CISO Secrets, we had Dr. Anton Chofkin, who's one of the heads of security architecture for Google Cloud. And we're kind of trying to explain the difference between what really a data center is, which is, you know, kind of moving from an on-prem to a hosted solution to cloud, which is more of built in architecture. That's one of the key differentials between kind of the difference between kind of a data center and a cloud. Would that be a right? Would that be a fair assessment in your mind?
Well, data center is it's some sort of something physical. Okay, I'm running a data center. I have computers there. I have power cords there. I have a network there. A cloud is sort of a way to get the services. So I used to have my data center in our company. Now I can have a virtual data center or data center as a service in the cloud. And I manage this virtual data center same way as I manage it my own data center in the company. But I don't physically own the equipment.
Brilliant. So our topic today is data centers are the new computer, and this involves a lot of different challenges. How do we address infrastructure of legacy systems within kind of the new model of data centers are the new computer?
Well, the infrastructure of legacy system, it's either disappear or become virtual. Because the cloud providers are building their data centers in a way that it is the most efficient to deliver the services that they promise to deliver or they set up to deliver. And the way many people consume the services is in terms of environment is very similar in the way that they used their physical equipment. So that's one thing. The other thing is that this cloud and data center that becomes, when I say becomes unit of computing, it is actually started, this cloud stuff started as the basically warehouses that were renting computing by MIPS and storage by gigabytes. But when you have this compute power and capabilities in a single place, there's a new services were developed based on the disaggregated application. So there is a multiple sort of collaborative microservices that talk to each other. And by chaining these different microservices, you create a new type of application, new type of service. And this is makes this data center to be very different than the classical enterprise data center or that where most of the traffic were in and out. Now there is a lot of cooperation and joint work between multiple microservices. There is a lot of traffic out there in the cloud that different microservices talk to each other in order to create the bigger service.
Yeah, it's like think of like people hanging out in one building previously that all be in different buildings and had to talk, and now they're all in the same room, right? And they're all kind of trying to intercommunicate within that one room. Kind of an interesting approach to this infrastructure is from a single and multi-tenant perspective, right? And I think that's kind of what you were leaning towards the end there, which is, the idea that there's a ton of microservices out there today that are very intertwined in multi-tenants on a single kind of environment within a data center. How do we start to address a single and a multi-tenant environment in kind of this model of the data centers, the new computer?
Well, the multi-tenancy, the classical and I think most efficient way to deliver to implement multi-tenancy is by making the virtual data centers or virtual networks. So you have these containers, containerizable microservices that are associated with a particular tenant or particular service that they talk to each other. They're basically like configured with a sort of, you know, pipeline that you push data from one side and it gets out. You get out the result from the other side. But the communication and the scaling of these services is transparent and it's basically on demand as required by the application and by the load in the data center. So the multi-tenancy is achieved by having this multiple virtual pipelines that are isolated by equipment. It is that's what virtualization is all about. You have this virtual pipeline that are not that there is no interception in between. So there is no leakage of data or any interference between them.
Right, but there's an inherent challenges in this model from a security perspective for a lot of practitioners, and it could be just because it's so new and we don't yet know the full scope or fundamentals of it. How do you kind of look at this kind of from a security perspective of the single and multi-tenant aspects of this? Because sometimes, you know, someone's weakness could be yours.
Right. So, you know, security is something that you cannot guarantee that you have a full security. You right. just try to minimize the attack service, attack surface, and you try to figure out how to identify the intrusion, and especially, you know, zero date attacks. It's like unlike virus where you know signature and you're looking for some specific thing. Sometimes you don't really know. So the way we are looking forward of doing this is actually apply AI technologies to manage and provision and monitor the data center. So we are collecting quite a lot of data from the equipment, and we are trying to identify anomalies in the behavior of the applications of the data center. And once we detect the anomaly, we analyze where it comes from and what does it do. And if it's attack, then we at least we know that we are under attack. So the thing is that what you need to do, you need to there's a new compute tier, which is infrastructure computing, and you need to isolate it as much as you can from the application tier, where actually you're running the applications. So you know there were multiple cases where attacker that runs on the same compute with the same compute domain as the victim, they actually can interfere, and you can take over the computer. So if you there's a lot of software there's a lot of attacks based on the software bugs. Recently, there were attacks that are actually like Meltdown and Spectre attack that were based on this side channel attack based on some hardware characteristics of CPUs. So what we are doing, we are segregating the application tier and the infrastructure tier. So infrastructure tier runs in different compute domain. So this way we reduce the attack surface, and by analyzing the data, so you can think about there's a whole computing that manages and provisions the infrastructure. And it assigns the resources, manages the resources, and also monitors the behavior and figures out what's going on in the data center.
So you brought up something very interesting, the idea of having AI essentially be the eyes and ears of various anomalies that kind of take place within a data center network traffic. Now, one of the common challenges, and I know several folks in the kind of data center industry, is your traffic is never really standard, right? I mean, when you're dealing with, you know, thousands of tenants in a building, it's like having an office building or an apartment building with 1,000 different people. Not all of them do the same exact thing. Some people wake up and do what we consider to be normal, go to work, come back, have dinner, maybe go out to dinner every once in a while, so forth. But in a data center, in a cloud environment, how hard is it to really find the anomalies when things change so often because of just the rapid pace of development and the rapid scaling of different infrastructures?
Yeah, well, you know, there is no simple and one answer to this
question. No, I realize that.
Yeah, and so what you are trying to do, you basically apply the machine like unsupervised learning, trying to identify things that happens normally and how things evolve. You know, looking at your example of the building, you know, there's different people coming and going in different times and you know, in different hours, but probably everybody is going on their feet and not on their hands.
Right.
So if you identify a guy that comes you know, upside down, then it's definitely the thing that you want to flag.
What so, if he's practicing for, you know, like American Ninja Warrior or Israeli Ninja?
Yeah. MJ. No, that's fine. The point is that this is anomaly that you detect. So you have a lot of data processing, so you identify some sort of normal behavior, and now there is abnormal behavior. So first of all, you want to know it happens. Then what you do about it is, you know, you analyze it, and if you come to the conclusion that that's fine, that's fine. Okay, so sometimes this happens. So you know it for next time. But anomaly detection is something that is really efficient to do with the AI, and it's really hard to do on sort of, you know, by writing sequential code on the one human machine.
Yeah, that's you know, so that's very interesting, because you kind of hinted early on of the idea of machine learning, which is kind of studying and adapting. And the concept of AI, after you get that, to set a base forth of intelligence so that it actually becomes completely automated without human intervention. Was I right kind of in summarizing what you just said?
Let's put it this way. It's not that it's without human intervention, but you may enable human intervention to be at sort of more distant. Okay, you don't need to go and you know, there's alerts that you learn them first, and then you know that these are you know, false alerts, so you don't need to involve human, and then you get to know this AI model gets to know the way your data center is operating, and it enables you to identify you know, the real outliers and not just, you know, simple things.
So let's talk a little bit about the idea of scaling and the complexity of scaling processes where a data center becomes your new computer, because there's an aspect to that where scalability seems to be a bit more, I would say, of a challenge, maybe, or am I mistaken here?
Well, scalability is definitely a challenge, and there is multiple dimensions in the scalability. And one of the things that enables you to scale is to do some domain-specific processing or accelerations. Basically, you know, you you can, it's AMDA law, right? You can improve your, at the end of the day, you are going to be limited by some sequential code in your program. And unless, and if you cannot find a way to make it more parallel so you can apply more resources, then you're better off to do some dedicated accelerations. So, and we do it for the network, we do it for computing. GPU is the great example of, you know, this very, very highly parallel process technology that is applied now on mainly in the space of AI, because it is something that becomes a fairly prevalent way to process the data. So we're moving from the von Neumann paradigm to data flow paradigm of data processing. And this enables actually to solve the problems that you couldn't solve before, because you know, it's not that you are writing the program, it's the computer writes the program. You used to have this software developer that is sitting and writing C code. Now you just take the neural network and pump a lot of data through it and create and train the network and create this way the service. And this is very different data processing than running it on the sequential machine, on the von Neumann machine.
But do you think that using that model, you can create an AI model that essentially, as it's doing that, it's doing it with security by design rather than security after the fact?
Well, you try to do it with security by design. But again, security is not something that you can, it's not like mathematical proof.
Correct.
It's something that you there is always this, you know, you try to reduce the or limit the attack surface, and you need to just watch out and see the intrusion. You know, I talked to multiple times with the CISOs, and all of them say that we are the question is not you know what. How do we make that nobody will the breach will not happen? Is but rather how do you identify the breach and how do you respond?
Right, and we see that today, right? We see that today very often, where you've got threat actors in your network, you have threat actors monitoring what you do, and you don't even know they're there. You know, I relegate it to I don't know if you remember the movie The Invisible Man with Kevin Bacon, where he becomes completely invisible and he's running, and he's a scientist and he's running around the laboratory spying on people and they can't see him, but he's in there and he's seeing everything. Right. And you kind of brought that up earlier when we started the podcast today, which is how do you defend your perimeter from the outsiders, but how do you make sure that no one is inside your perimeter who's nefarious with evil intentions? And security by design, the concept of it, I think, is noble. There are specific aspects of security controls that, based on what you're telling me, would be an unbelievable add-on to that process, right? Because security, at the end of the day, you're not only trying to reduce attack surface, there are controls that you put in place that really do not only limit the attack surface, but also limit the damage of a successful attack. And so one of my philosophies and one of the things I communicate a lot to our board members, you know, as a CISO, is we're going to be victims. The question is how, you know, is it going to be someone who, you know, robs my cash register on Black Friday, you know, after the busiest shopping day of the year, and they take a really large piece of our revenue? Or is it going to be on a Monday afternoon, when it's the slowest time of the day for me? And I always relocate it to cash because that seems to resonate the most. And that tends to really kind of set the pace in terms of how do we ensure that when someone does get in, that whatever they leave with is very minimal and it doesn't have a large wide scale impact on the business, rather than, you know, something in what we're seeing today with the Microsoft Exchange 0 days, where you're talking about 30, 40,000 organizations at least that are impacted by it on a global scale, which could be by far the largest espionage campaign against organizations in human history, is what we're living through today. So,
Right. So I think the thing is that you do some, you know, there is some checklist books, whatever, that you do to reduce the attack surface. But at the end of the day, you really need to look at how to identify that you are under attack, because it's just given that it will happen. And assuming that a bad guy cannot get to your premise, it's fallacy. It's fallacy. There's electricity company in Israel that hired the guy. They are not connected to internet. The data center is not connected to internet, so you cannot get to the data center from outside unless you come as a visitor. And so they hired the company to do the audit. And a couple of hours after, these guys came to the company as the visitors. Their software was on all the servers of the electricity company. And what happened is that shortly after they, and of course, you know, there was under supervision because it was audit. But what happened is that shortly after they came to the company premises, one of the employees found a CD in the restroom that was labeled like the list of the layoffs for the next month. Okay, so that's it. he took the CD, the employee, and put it to his PC just to see.
I heard Yossi share that story. The former CISO at the Israeli electric company. I think you know Yossi Shenak, and
maybe you heard from the same source.
Yeah, we may have heard this. It's an unbelievable story, by the way. That even if you're disconnected from the internet, it doesn't mean that you're safe.
Yeah, right. And that's, you know, that's a classical insider attack. And, you know, employees can, so even, that's what I said before, you know, there was a protecting periphery. It's not, it has never been, a really safe thing to do. But now it's even worse, and it's more severe. And it's, you know, you get people coming from outside to run on your machines just because you sell the compute cycles.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. So we're going to take a for everyone listening. Up until now, you've been hearing an awesome conversation. Now you get to earn a continued education point for actually being part of the podcast. So in the show notes below, you'll see a link. You go to that link and you put in the keyword for today's show. Thanks to our friends over at Checkpoint, which is CloudGuard IaaS. So infrastructure as a service, CloudGuard IaaS, a space between CloudGuard and IaaS. Thanks to Checkpoint for getting you guys another continued point for education, for just listening to me and Michael chat on about God knows what. So that's the beauty of these shows. So again, CloudGuard IaaS is today's keyword. So Michael, a few questions here before we wrap up. We're almost out of time. So what do you think should be the standards in this process of kind of a data center becoming the new computer? What are some of the standards that you think need to be in place for the scalability and the quick adoption of this model?
Well, there should be standard interfaces so people can get the services and can also develop services. There should be a very efficient east-west communication, because that's the way the services are built. At Mellanox, we have developed the fastest network out there, and our equipment is used pretty much in all the big data centers around the world, the cloud providers. And of course, you know, you need to watch out on different dimensions of this, like, you know, supply chain security. You know, so nobody will put some rogue components in the servers or in the storage or in the equipment you build all the way through.
I love that concept of just kind of doing it. You know, when we talk about new stuff like this and we talk kind of the new concepts, I like to think of how could we do it so that from the baseline it's good, right? Kind of from the foundation. And what you just said is spot on. There needs to be a single kind of interface that allows, you know, for that interconnectivity and interexchange that makes it really simple and quick to scale with it as well.
Yeah, standard interfaces. That's important.
Yeah, and it's not very common, unfortunately, right? Especially in the security world. I'll tell you that some of my people have 7-8 different interfaces to get information because none of them interconnect.
Well, good luck.
Yeah, I love your encouragement. Thanks for that one. So, you know, I kind of asked you early on a little bit about how you look at cybersecurity. But, you know, in your role as an entrepreneur at Mellanox and leading that company, you really kind of looked at security from the base level. As a CTO, when you're communicating with your CISOs, because a lot of our audience, you know, on this podcast are all CISOs. And so we always hear from each other, but we don't get to hear a lot from you. So what are maybe one or two things that you would tell a CISO as they're communicating with the technology people in the business to really be able to build an effective partnership?
That's a good question. Okay, so first of all, don't assume that you are safe. You know, talk about security. Don't assume that you are safe. Think about identifying the attack and the recovery plan. So you will be attacked. There will be damage, and you just need to be able to figure out what's the scale of the damage and how to recover. You know, be it physical damage or data breach damage, and always watch for new technologies.
Be educated.
Yeah, in Mellanox we actually. Try to basically, you know, eat your own dog food. So we have been deploying our technology in our data centers.
And do you find like when you do that you get a little bit more insight into maybe some stuff that you thought of that maybe you didn't think of? Like you get some insights into like some stuff where maybe the thinking was flawed to begin with?
Well, of course, you find a lot of interesting things when you really deploy stuff, and of course, you find things that you were right and things that you were wrong. And the tricky part is just to learn from your mistakes. And as a CTO, my job is also to, you know, to figure out and to identify the problems that. People don't even know today that they will need to solve them. So
yeah,
it's of course there are some, you know, problems that surface, and it's definitely interesting, but it is not the key. It's not the main thing. If people know they have a problem, they will solve it. They don't need me for this. They need me to solve the problem that they don't think about.
That is a very, and 100% true. And I love it, Michael. I want to thank you for coming on this week's episode of CISO Secrets. Mm-hmm. You've really been, this has been a very refreshing episode, from my point of view, to be able to speak to someone, like yourself, who's an entrepreneur, a CTO and really a transformational figure. So, I appreciate it. And I'm grateful that you took the time, especially I know that it's, you know, dinner time where you're at. and we're taking away time from your family. So we'll be forever grateful for you to share your wisdom. And thank you so much again.
Very welcome. My pleasure.
Folks, that's it for this week's CISO Secrets. Again, our keyword for this episode is CloudGuard IaaS. Again, CloudGuard IaaS. Make sure to check it out. Earn your CPE. Subscribe and share this week's podcast. We'll be back with more next week. Until then, my name is James Azar. Thank you so much for watching. Thanks so much for tuning in and listening, most importantly. And we'll be back. See you next week, folks. Take care.
Thank you for listening, and make sure to subscribe to our podcast and share it with your friends and colleagues.